That's for the pallid birdie beetles that are flying around right now. It's their love song. There are plenty of wrong places, right?
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to talk trees. We've got ISA certified arborist Sarah Maitland from Integrity Save a Tree in studio, along with Rebecca Senior, the arborist master gardener for U of A corporate extension office. And we'll talk about that program a little bit in the last segment. Sounds like you guys have done quite a 200 students a year, and it's gone all virtual. So we'll get a little inside peek, and if you're interested in taking the Master Gardener class, what that entails. But we have a text question that leads into our tip of the week, which is seasonal storm prep. And this homeowner allowed his neighbor to cut a branch of their Australian bottle tree that was hanging over into the neighbor's yard. So now it's lopsided, and he's wanting to know, should he reshape the tree to make it symmetrical? If he left it like that, is it more vulnerable to getting blown over in the wind? How much can he trim during the summer without stressing the tree?
Bottle trees do okay with trimming in the summer, and we do try to keep the end weight reduced on those.
And the end weight?
The end weight, yeah. And aesthetically, it's hard
What's
to picture.
What's the end weight?
Okay. So trees, a lot of people trim trees up, strip them up on the interior. It allows the tree to only grow on the ends of the tree. And we call that line tailing, and we frown upon that. But what we really want to do when we're pruning and getting trees ready for storms is to reduce end weight. And so if you look at a tree in a storm, it's moving in all different directions. Trees use their leaves and their branches to dissipate wind energy. And so we try to take weight off of the branches and bring them into the core. And so the weight is more balanced. And so this tree, it's hard to picture how out of balance it is, but it might just be aesthetic, or it might just be that, you come in and do some good reduction cuts to a lateral branch to balance the tree.
And then for the other trees, and this one was particular to the homeowner's question, the Australian bottle tree. Rebecca, you were mentioning you saw a Palo Verde blown over on the way, and our desert natives can be very susceptible to storm damage.
Yes, they can. And again, a lot of the problem is that end weight that Sarah mentioned, and it's the way that trees grow. They grow at their tips. And so that outer part of the canopy where that new growth is, sometimes you need to give them haircuts. I often talk about it that way. That's where they grow, and you need to cut them back so that there's less weight. And, of course, our native trees take advantage of every bit of water and can grow very quickly on the ends, and then that makes them blow over. Along with our friend this month, the Palo Verde root borer. So if there's damage to the root, if there's damage from the insect eating the root, or from a root rot of whatever, those are the trees that are going to blow over.
And you don't see them blown over a lot in the desert. It's the ones that we plant and then trim up to be shade tree. You look at them out in the desert, and the tree canopy and the branches come all the way to the ground. So they've kind of completely protected themselves 360 from the wind. We trim them up, leave all this huge end weight so we can sit under it for shade tree, and that wind comes along, and it's like a big sail on a ship. It just picks the whole tree up, and especially if we haven't watered deep enough, we haven't moved the irrigation out to the end of the tree line, and the root ball's smaller in the middle, gets a little wet from the rain, and it's just...
Absolutely. Yep, you got it.
But if you could walk the desert and look a little closer, you'll see that they're self-pruning. When those branches get too heavy, they snap right off, and they grow in another spot. And so those trees, driving by on the freeway look like they're perfectly shaped, but you go up and look in close and you'll see that there's branches that just, the whole branch, splits off right at the trunk in desert trees.
Wonderful. Well, and our desert natives, we've got Palo Verde. Mesquite's not really native. We have a lot of them here, but far enough back, I understand that mesquites came in from Texas 500-600 years ago, If my memory's a little shady there. But
I did not know that. I thought the Volutina was native. And,
well, yeah. that'll be a follow-up for next month's Talk to
Tree. That would be good, yeah.
Fact check the
the velvet mesquite. Yeah.
But the ironwood, still in my opinion, is my favorite desert tree. It's the slowest growing, but there's just something about that ironwood on the
it's majestic.
That's a perfect word.
Very much. They can live like to 600 years, so they are the majestic elder of the desert.
Just knowing that, how slow they grow, when you see a mature one, you just have to respect it for as long as it's been around.
I agree.
Survivor. Y'all talking storm prep. You know, I'm looking at rain log here, and Queen Creek got over a half inch of rain last night.
Lucky.
Something hit the Southeast Valley last night. I'd like to hear from a couple Southeast Valley residents. Did y'all see wind with that as well? Gary says he woke up to a storm alert on his phone like at 10:30 in Scottsdale. I slept through the whole thing. I had no idea. I thought the brown sky this morning was wildfire smoke out of you know, the Tiger Fire or something. But I guess we had a dust storm last night, Far East Valley.
Half an inch. That's great.
Yeah, just south of Gateway Airport, right at Powder Ranch. Six tenths of an inch.
Wow. That's really great for that area of the valley. I didn't get anything at my house.
No, not one. We didn't get one drop.
And so there's supplemental water that needs to happen with trees in the desert and in our area and in our residential landscapes. If we're not going to get regular monsoon rains or winter rains, it's really important to supplement the trees. Just because they're desert trees doesn't mean they don't need water. And so I encourage people to put a little hose on a trickle and move it around the drip line of the tree and give them a deep soaking once a month. An easy way to do it is to even get a soaker hose. And you get 1 gallon per foot per on the soaker hoses. And you can put two or three together and put them around the drip line. You can actually even run them to a timer that fits onto your your hose bib. And that's a way of doing it, you know, that way too. But supplemental water is going to be really important, especially in areas like Cave Creek where we didn't get any rain. So,
and I had to replace my irrigation box timer recently. I mean, the old one, it's a computer element that's sitting on the side of the house in the sun for 18 years. It just, you couldn't even see the screen anymore. It was so blacked out. But I haven't finished setting all of the timer. I've got our few little lawn areas. Those are all on timers and working fine, but I haven't reset my trees because I'll go and do them manually. And that has really kept me on top of a lot of things. Like, you know, every time I turned it on, I'll walk that, that zone that's on and check for leaks and everything. Whereas otherwise, when it's all automatic, you can kind of tend to get disconnected. And I've always got my little pruner and my loppers and, you know, just do supplement, you know, little cuts here and there as
I'm proud of you
as I walk it. And that
I'm proud of you on the maintenance on all that. That's really great. But it's good to have trees on a separate line if you can at all. And there's new timers, and the Ratio is the one I just installed. I can run the whole thing over my phone or my iPad. I can do supplemental waters if I need to that way. So those are good timers.
On your iPad. I could have used that over the last couple of weeks when we went to Iowa, because that was the one thing that when we got back after 2 weeks, there was a couple of the tree zones that needed a little extra love when we got back.
Well, that's exactly what I did last 4th of July. I was camping up in Forest Lakes, got on my phone, turned on my water to my lawn, and ran it an inch. And I follow the AzMet website for lawn watering guidelines, AZMET. The University of Arizona has 17, I think, satellite areas where they judge evapotranspiration. They'll take in the humidity and the temperatures, and you can go on the website and follow their guidelines, and they'll tell you how much water you need.
That's awesome.
And yeah, AzMet is a University of Arizona website on lots of different topics of weather. And if you're interested in growing fruit trees, they have the accumulated cold days that you want to follow too. So there's lots of good information there.
And for anybody not familiar with that, what is the importance of the cold days?
Well, certain trees like cherries really need a lot of accumulated cold, hours of cold in order to set the fruit, some less. And of course, citrus, our tropical type plant tree, doesn't need any cold.
That's better known as chill hours, right?
Correct. Right. Yeah.
And depending on what variety of tree, depends on what you can plant in your yard. If you went and bought like a Macintosh apple, it would never set fruit in, you know, Phoenix, Tucson. So you got to know, you got to look for your Dorsets or your Annie apples, which is not a red apple that you are looking for. So it's a matter of making sure that you're planting something that will produce fruit for you if that's your goal.
Yeah. And also on that website, you can download data from past years. So if you have a report or a research that you're doing, you can have access to that from the university.
And give that website again.
It's the Arizona Meteorological site, at AZMET. So
AZMET.com.
AZMET. It's EDU. Probably .arizona.edu. I don't have it memorized, but if you do that, you'll find it.
We'll make sure and get that link added to today's archive page as well. And talk about your extension office program if somebody was interested in becoming a master gardener. You're the person to talk to.
Yeah, I do I run the training portion of Master Gardeners, and Master Gardeners are volunteer educators that are trained through the University of Arizona's resources, and to fulfill our mission of bringing the information from the university out to the people. And so this has gone all the way back to, you know, Abraham Lincoln creating these land grant entities that are tasked with doing this for the states. And so we train volunteers, amazing citizen scientists, people who are also so big-hearted. They love to help people do better. And we have a plant hotline where you can call in and send messages, photos, and get questions answered. Over 2,000 questions a year are answered by our Master Gardener volunteers. We also go to libraries and different festivals and answer questions.
And how long does it take to become a master gardener? I'm sure, you know, everyone's learning pace is a little different, but you know, how fast can you crank out a master gardener?
Yeah, well, we can crank a master gardener out in the 17 weeks of the course. And the good news is that we have publications that are written by the scientists from the University of Arizona. And I tell them, when you leave the course, you can be an expert on the topic of fertilizing citrus, because you have the publication from Dr. Glenn Wright, one of our scientists. And so they can walk confidently out into the community and help people because of our quantity of publications.
And then how does somebody sign up for the course?
They would go to the website. It's extension, because that's part of our land grant name, sort of. So it's extension.arizona for Arizona State University. So extension.arizona.edu/ MG.
Master Gardener.
MG for Master Gardener.
And are we in the middle of a 17-week course?
We've just started.
Just started. Mm-hmm. So you would be something you could plan for later in the fall to start on the next one.
Yes. And so we have about 85 seats available, and we typically have 250 people asking to be in that position. So it is hard to get in.
Wow.
And people usually try multiple times. And we try to accommodate everybody that we can, of course. But, yeah.